And you're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today is Tuesday. Today's Tuesday, July. Oh gosh, the calendar still says June. But I know it's July 6th because yesterday was July 5th. And there was a reading at Historic Northampton yesterday. It was a reading of Frederick Douglass's famous speech from July 5th in 1852. What is the 4th of July to the American slave? What is your 4th of July to the American slave? What to the American slave is your 4th of July? Something like that. It was an oral, they don't have recorded versions from that year, but you get the idea. So for today's show, I'll start off with the Buffy St. Marie song, and then I'll play some clips, which I'm going to play a lot of the same ones I played last week because I kind of felt like I really flubbed up last week's show.
There were Choctaws in Alabama, Chippewas in St. Paul, Mississippi mud runs like a river in me. America, ooh, she's like a mother to me. Spacious skies for amber waves of gray, for purple mountain majesty above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on.
Here's an interesting statistic that I read recently, which is American Indians and Alaska Natives serve in the armed forces at 5 times the national average and have served with distinction in every major conflict for over 200 years. Native people have the highest per capita involvement of any population to serve in the U.S. military, and they also have a higher concentration of women service members than all other groups. I'd like to read a little bit more about that. Anyway, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That was Buffy St. Marie that we just listened to. So Out There is mostly a talk show. And I guess here's you can listen to me talking. This is I'll call this Top Freedom Thoughts. Here's 9 minutes of my Top Freedom Thoughts that I collected yesterday from myself.
I want to tell you why women have the right to go top free anywhere others are allowed to go top free. Why in a world where mountaintops are blown off for coal, where few get rich while many get poor? Why in a country that imprisons its population and a country where the wealth of white Americans is however many times the wealth of black Americans? Why, where one of the top killers of women is their partners or ex-partners? Why do I care about my right to not wear a shirt if I don't want to? It's just such an obvious equal justice right. I don't want to spend any energy fighting for that. There's no need to. It's obvious. Just do it. In a country where 1% of the population controls
35%
of the wealth, why do I care about a woman's right to go top free? Because it's so personal. That's why. Like, what if there was a law or... what if there was a law or history of laws that continued culturally in cultural practice that all women had to have long hair? They had to have long hair so it would cover their breasts. Or they had to have long hair so it would cover their necks. You know, their necks are slender and sexual and could, like, turn people on. And their necks are, they're important for reproduction, you know, because you have to have a neck because all the body parts are attached to that. You know, you can't have breast or head, all that, if you don't have a neck, so you gotta cover it. Or what if it was a law that women had to shave certain parts of their body? I applied for a job once and was told that I would have to shave to be accepted. I refused. We came to a compromise I didn't refuse. The compromise we came to was that, okay, I'll shave, but then it will grow back, and I won't shave if I don't want to. Why these laws governing women's bodies? Well, these laws govern men's bodies too. Men are required to shave for certain jobs, or, you know, not have a beard, or only have facial hair of a certain length, or cut off all their hair short for certain jobs. It's not just women. And there's different professional dress codes for men and women. Women can be professional in a sleeveless outfit and have their legs showing, whereas men typically have to have their shoulders covered and wear pants. So in some ways, when it comes to dressing, women have more freedom than men. Women are allowed to wear dresses or pants, but men aren't really allowed to wear dresses in a professional setting. Why can't we just have equal dress codes for males and females and everyone in between, so we don't have to decide who's male or female or who fits into what category? Can't we just wear what we want, as long as it's, you know, certain reasonable standard for safety and hygiene? When I see a man without a shirt on in public, it just feels like too much naked to me. And it feels like they're flaunting the double standard, flaunting their privilege. Here I recognize I flaunt my privilege a lot, going where I want, when I want, in the backyards for berries and climbing trees for berries that aren't necessarily 100% public trees, and sticking my head into dumpsters and things that aren't really mine. But I know some women who say, oh, I like when men don't wear their shirts in public because they look nice. I'm sure some men would say that about women if they didn't wear their shirts in public, and they'd probably say some meaner things too. But people are going to say that no matter what you're wearing or not wearing. So many stories used to keep women in their place. Oh, you have to cover your breasts because it might distract the male species. Okay, here's a story. Once I was in Indiana visiting Alex's granddad and family with Alex, and I went for a bike ride in this town, and I was wearing a white t-shirt because it was really hot. It was summertime, and this downpour came, it just poured, I was drenched, and then I had to go, I think I stopped at the library because I had to use the bathroom or it was cold or I needed to look at a map or something. And it was like after school hours. And I remember I walked through the library to the bathroom or something and was quickly approached by the security guard who asked me to leave because he said I was distracting the teenage boys at the computers or at the tables doing their homework. So just because someone or ones identify and label parts of my body as sexual, then I'm now required to cover it. Look, there's certain body parts you cover for hygiene. And I don't know, I'm fine with covering parts of our body for you know, cultural reasons. I don't want to sit in a public chair with my bare body where someone else is stuck their bare back. Anyway, so I think it's good to cover body surfaces that will touch surfaces that other people's body surfaces will touch. If you've never ridden a bike without a shirt on, which I hadn't done until I was probably in my late 20s, wow. It just feels so nice to liberate the breasts. I remember the first time just to feel air on my skin. Skin that had never had air on it like that before. Something that men and boys take for granted. I didn't wear a shirt too much until I was, I mean I did, but like around the house. You know, I wasn't really aware whether or not I had a shirt on until I was maybe, I want to say 9. And then I remember I was just starting to sprout nipples. And I was going to bed and I took off my shirt and I walked down the hallway towards the kitchen where some of my dad and my brothers were. And I threw the shirt down the laundry chute and I remember they looked at me. They looked at my budding nipples and they laughed or something. And I was suddenly self-conscious in this way that haunts a female forever. This feeling.
Hi, my name is Pam Parton.
Hi.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I wasn't paying attention there. These clips were clipping right along. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Now, following up that clip, here's some Helen Reddy.
I can do anything.
Well, to be honest, I don't even know exactly what different laws say, like state laws in Massachusetts or local city ordinances about a woman's right to go top free wherever men can. And I was arrested once in Chicago for it when I was living there. It was, you know, it was part of a bike ride protest. And the only reason the cops arrested us was because they said a woman complained and said, there's children out here and there you got women riding around without shirts on. And I was like, we were just like, what? But like kids, I mean, little children. Well, anyway. Okay, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I forgot what I was going to say next, except for free the nipple. And so here's one. Here's another song for women and everyone.
We're taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights. Taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights. This one is for my daughter, born to be a leader. A visionary, powerful, the truth is what I feed her. You can know the difference very second that you meet her. 'Cause this new breed of woman ain't playing the backseater. No prima ballerina, making hat 'cause you Latina. One in four women homeless 'cause someone beat her. Respect that we deserve is the power that we earn. Hashtag me too, my body, my terms.
We need reunification. We treat the genders like two different nations, yeah, yeah. And we don't have time to be having no patience, yeah, yeah. Remember last time that we waited for changes, yeah, yeah. I like a woman that stands for what's right, yeah, yeah. I like a woman that stands for a right, yeah, yeah. Still go to work twice as hard for that bae, yeah, yeah. 'Cause she only make half with the mimic at night, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights. Taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights.
When we stand in allegiance, we will never be defeated. She is so powerful, but mistreated. I've seen what society thinks she should be. But every single woman is unique. You are different, you are gifted. Stronger than you know, they can never take your soul. Broken, beaten, torn to pieces. Stronger than you know, they can never take your soul.
We've been chastised and laughed at, but women always bounce back. Limit my abilities, I'm swerving way past that. Hold if they ain't grasp that, we can never backtrack. Women run the world and that's a fact. Snap or cap that. Wanna make a change? Oh, that's funny, me too. They objectifying women and they thinking it's cool. Wanna talk about equality? I'm joining in too. I'm Dakota, I guess you could call me Mrs. Me too.
We're taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights. Taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights.
Powerful beyond belief, I breathe soul into life. Not despite of, because I am women. I am the revolution, ancestral calling to join us truth. Susan B. Anthony and Ida B. Wells paved the way so that Ava DuVernay could create today. Blinded by divinity, our powers go on to infinity. United pillars of liberty.
We're taking back the power, 'cause we deserve it. A women's right, a human right. We want an equal voice, equal pay, equal rights.
That was a YouTube video called Taking Back the Power, Women's Rights Anthem and Music Video from, I don't know, to see Big Picture Anthems and Yep brought six young recording artists together to produce a new anthem for the Pound Women's Rights Movement, or hashtag Take It Back. Pound and hashtag, I don't know, they all look the same to me. Next on Out There, I have some clips, so I'll play this other. Here's my niece, Christina Moyer.
What would you have done if it started coming your direction?
I had boots on.
Well, I could have gone higher than your boots.
I can run really fast.
Well, I think a mad rattlesnake might be faster.
If I'm running full speed, he's not going to be able to strike above my boots.
Oh, okay. I won't trust him. I'll take your word for it.
So we're at family reunion, and I overheard Christina telling some story about catching a snake. This is my niece, Christina Moyer.
Hello, everybody.
Where do you live?
I live in Castlewood, Virginia. So that's far southwest Virginia in the Appalachian Mountains.
And so was this story about a snake?
So my friend and I went hiking, and we got a pretty early start, so we were out on the trail. It was probably 10 or 11, and it's a pretty popular trail to a swimming hole. It's called Devil's Bathtub, and it's a really beautiful place. And anyway, but
is it in southwestern Virginia?
Yes, it is. It's one of the more crowded trails around in our area, because a lot of places we hike are pretty secluded. But we had been on the trail for probably 20 minutes or so, and then we see some people up on the trail, and they're like, stop, there's a rattlesnake. And I was like, okay, because my dad's a biologist, and rattlesnakes aren't very common where we live, and most people assume, if they don't know snakes, they'll assume anything other than a black snake is something poisonous. And so I was kind of hesitant at first, but we kind of passed a couple people and got closer to get a better look at it, and sure enough, it was a big rattlesnake. It surprised me how huge it was, but it definitely had a rattle. And there were some people trying to get it off the trail. I mean, it wasn't on the trail, but it was definitely in striking distance of the trail, so people walking by could be bitten if it decided to strike. But people were trying to use a stick and push it away, and it wasn't really having it. I mean, it wasn't really aggressively, it wasn't striking necessarily as much as just like, no, I don't want to move. This is my spot. So finally it curled up, probably about 4 feet from the trail. And there was this lady with her two boys and a dog. And the guy who was trying to get it off with a stick, he was like, all right, say, you guys can come on by. So they went by. And then my friend Lydia and I, we were kind of standing there looking at it, trying to get a couple pictures. And we kind of started talking under our breath about ways to move it, because, you know, it's kind of a danger with so many kids and dogs. And right, you know, with all the leaves and brush by the trail, someone could easily step on it. And we didn't really just want to leave it there. So we were kind of talking under our breath, because we didn't know that the other guy there, we didn't know what he would think if we started discussing plans to catch it. But he heard us, and he was like, all right, guys, be safe. And he walked off and left us, and we're like, okay, awesome. So we were trying to figure out what to do. We didn't really want to kill it, and we didn't have a good way to kill it either. So we thought the best option would be to relocate it. But we didn't want to be carrying it down the trail, because that would cause quite a commotion. So we were discussing, well, we could put it in our backpacks, but we didn't really like that idea either. And then we're like, well, we've got a lunchbox, and it was probably like 3 inches tall and 8 inches long.
It's like a metal or fabric or insulated lunchbox fabric?
It was a fabric insulated lunchbox, yeah. So, I mean, we had our lunch in it, but it wasn't that hot of a day. So we took our lunch out, and we stuck it in our backpack.
Wait, how did you catch it, though? How did you catch it?
Well, we had to get the lunchbox ready first. It was full of our lunch. And so then I was like, okay, we need a fork stick. We were kind of trying to keep an eye on the snake, too.
Sorry, I thought you said I'll skip this part. I thought you said something about the... So go ahead. Let me interrupt.
So I found a forked stick, and I was trying to whittle it down to the right length so I could put it over its head so it couldn't slip its head underneath. And the nice thing about pit vipers, poisonous snakes, is... and this is also one way to tell them apart from non-poisonous snakes, is how big their head is in comparison to the neck, which is really an advantage when you're trying to catch one to keep their head from slipping out. But anyway, I got me a nice forked stick, and I reached over and pried the snake down, but I kind of got it in the middle of its body, so its head could still move, and it could still strike, like, at least a foot, and so it wasn't safe to grab it. But every time I picked up the stick, it would try to slither farther away, and all I had on was sandals, so I was making sure I didn't get my feet within striking distance. And again, it was a pretty calm snake, which is good. It wasn't really that aggressive. So I was trying to hold it down, though, and I was like, okay, I need another forked stick, because every time I picked my stick up, it would start moving, and I needed one stick to hold it, hold it in place, and another stick to get on its head.
What was Lydia doing during this time?
She was trying to grab sticks for me. Uh-huh. So she finally found a stick, and she was trying to whittle it down, but one end was longer, and I was still trying to hold the snake, and then I felt bad holding it down for so long, but anyway, she finally got the stick in okay condition, so I used that stick to hold it down, and then I put the other stick right behind its head, and I kind of held it there for 10 seconds or so to make sure it couldn't wiggle loose, and then I reached down and grabbed it behind the head and picked it up, and it was a big snake. I was surprised how fat it was. Like, it was quite a large snake.
Do you think it was maybe pregnant?
I don't know. Either that or had a large meal. The thing is, though, it wasn't large in one particular spot as much as its...
Like a large meal.
Its whole body was pretty large. So, it was a pretty heavy snake. Anyway, so my friend snapped a couple pictures real quick of me holding it, and then we're like, all right, we've got a snake and we've got a lunchbox, but how do we put it in without getting bitten? So we thought, okay, well, we'll just have to coil it up in the lunchbox and then let go of it while we've got a stick holding its head down, and then zip it up as much as we could, and then just try to jerk the stick out really quick and zip it closed before the snake, and hopefully it wouldn't stick its head out right after. So that's what we did, and it worked. And just as we're...
Okay. You coiled it up.
We coiled it up, put its head in the middle, and then used a stick.
And how did you close the zipper? Because wouldn't your hand be right next to the mouth?
Well, we had the stick holding its head down while we zipped it.
Okay.
And then we zipped all the way around, so it was just like
pulled the stick
like
out.
An inch opening where the stick was, and then we jerked the stick out and zipped that up real close, and then we high-fived each other, and we were like, wow, this is so crazy. I mean, my friend and I have gotten into so many crazy adventures, but we're like, having a rattlesnake in a lunchbox, that's kind of the top of the list there. And so anyway, we were pretty happy, but we were trying to zip it up real quick, and we saw some other people coming down the trail, and we're like, okay, we better keep moving, because we don't want them to be like, what's going on? Are you guys doing drugs or something here? So we were walking down the trail with it, and there, the trail, it's like 2 miles to the bathtub swimming hole spot, but then there's a longer loop that's like a 5-mile loop, and we're like, well, if we let it off way up on top of the mountain, there's a lot less traffic up there, so it's less likely to bite someone. So we just took it along with us, but we started getting worried that it didn't have enough ventilation, because it was a cooler, and it's like a leak-proof cooler, and it was plastic on the inside, so you could wipe it out. We're like, we didn't want it to suffocate. So we started looking in our backpacks, and she had a first aid kit. We had several large safety pins, so we we safety pinned about 2 inches of it closed, and then we unzipped it, safety pinned the zipper pull so it couldn't open any farther. So we had like a 2-inch area that was held closed by the safety pins, but there was still a small space for air. And then we pried a couple twigs in there so that some air could flow back and forth. And then we went on our way. We went swimming, and
we just left it with your shoes.
Our shoes, and tried not to talk about it when other people were there because I didn't want them to freak out. But I was like, I hope no one tries to open it for any reason. But yeah, my family was coming later, and we also had some strawberries in my backpack because I stopped by to get some fresh strawberries at a farm on the way there. And I was like, if I tell my brother, hey, we've got strawberries, he'll probably run straight to the cooler and open it up. And I was like, that'd be a disaster. So anyway, but we decided to name him because, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Did you sex him? Did you sex it too? You know, it was a him?
No, we didn't. We just assumed. So we named it Archibald. Mm. And it was actually kind of fun. It was like having a pet along. We we thought about feeding him some salami, but snakes can go a long time between meals, so we figured he'd be okay. But he was pretty chill for the most part, but you could tell when he was running his head along the top of the cooler trying to find a way out. And also when we walked, we kind of held him out away from us, which I'm sure made us look a little suspicious on the trail. But we didn't want our legs or anything to be brushing against the edge of the cooler in case the snake struck at us. But anyway, we're like, well, if anyone tries to mess with us, we'll be like, oh, you better not. We got a rattlesnake in our lunchbox. So, yeah, we ended up not letting him go out on that loop because there are still people out there, and we still didn't want him to end up biting anybody. And we didn't want to let him go on the way back either on someone's farm, because if he bit an animal or a person, you know, we didn't want that to happen either. So we took him up to a landfill near where we live, where it's just acres and acres of a big field, and it's not really farmed, or there's not many people that go up there. So we figured it was a pretty safe place to let him go. So I tied a string to the zipper pull and under the safety pins and opened it up, and he went on his way rattling his tail. So
did it rattle when it was inside the lunchbox?
No, it didn't. Huh. Well, it did at the very end a couple times, but on the trail it didn't. Yep.
So like when your hands are messing with the safety pin or tying the string to the zipper, like did you feel like
it was a little scary, yeah. Because I mean his fangs are pretty long.
Yeah.
So yep.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. So the next clip. This is Priya Green, I ran into when I was doing my Pedal People route 2 weeks ago in East Hampton, and I saw Priya painting a mural on the wall of the East Hampton Feed and Seed between the bike path and Mechanic Street in East Hampton, Massachusetts.
My name is Priya Ned Carney Green, and I'm an artist. I live in Springfield, and I'm working on this mural right now.
And this mural is on, this is Mechanic Street?
Mechanic Street, yeah, right behind the Manhan Rail Trail.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to be involved in it?
I was approached by someone on the East Hampton Cultural Council, Rachel Phillips, and she contacted me in 2020 saying that, you know, she wanted to work with me. There was some grant funding for public art. And so we've kind of been talking about this for, you know, several months. And she was scoping out walls. She found out that the owners of East Hampton Feed wanted to have a mural on the back of their building. So here we are. Here I am painting it.
Do you know about the design process, like how it was made or created?
Yeah.
Or?
We knew that we wanted to find some kind of intersection between my work and, you know, something that kind of overlapped with the business, since this is an agricultural type of store. They sell animal feed and garden supplies. So I had some of my work that has flowers and floral themes in it. So we kind of decided together that that would be the perfect intersection between my work and what they would want on their building. And so from there, I just kind of designed something that looks very similar to work that I have been doing, and just kind of made it custom for this wall. Originally, I was only going to paint like the very right-hand portion of the wall, and then we decided, no, it needs to be really big. We need to like have it be the whole wall, so it makes a really big impact, and I'm glad that we made that decision.
Well, I'm excited to see what it is. I can't really tell so far. How long do I have to wait?
So I'm hoping that Friday will be my last day of painting. So I just have a few more days left of painting details. So definitely by next week it should be done.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Wednesday, June 23rd, 24th? You know what today is?
23rd.
Today's the 23rd, Wednesday, June 23rd. So by the week of the 30th, whatever, first week of July, it should be done?
Yep, yeah.
How long have you been working on it?
Since Friday, the 18th. I've been here every day, all day, every day, even when it was raining.
Oh, wow. Well, how do you work in the rain?
I was working while it was drizzling, which is fine, but I was like, had planned that as soon as it started downpouring, I would be out of here, so I was all ready to leave once it started downpouring.
Uh-huh. Well, because this building, I don't see a gutter on it.
Yeah, it doesn't really have one. No.
And it doesn't have much of an overhang at all. It's maybe like 5-6 inches, maybe.
Yeah. So some of the paint I did yesterday did get washed off slightly, but for the most part, I got a lot of painting done, even in the rain.
Wait, so you've painted this entire wall?
Well, I had help the first few days.
Because this wall's huge. Like,
it is huge. I mean, if I had to do this by myself, it would definitely take more than a week.
Yeah. Do you know the dimensions of this wall?
I think that it's, I want to say 80 feet long, and probably about 20 feet tall.
Yeah. So this is a like corrugated metal wall.
Yeah.
Have you painted on metal before? How does this shape, the curvy shape, how does this affect you?
That's a good question. It's been a challenge. Because, you know, I tend to want to go super detailed with my work, but the corrugated metal kind of makes it difficult to get really detailed, so I just have to kind of work with it. Every mural has its quirks like this, so there's always some kind of problem solving that has to happen on the spot. Mm-hmm. So this is no different.
So you have other murals around the area that you've painted?
My husband, Andre, is also an artist.
Oh, Green?
Yeah, Andre Green. Yeah. Do you know him?
No. Well, I don't think I know him, but I've seen his name in front of City Hall in downtown Northampton.
Yeah, yeah. He did one of the murals on the pavement, I think, in Northampton last year.
Yeah.
But we have a mural. We have a few murals in Springfield. That's where we live. We did one of the murals for the Fresh Paint Mural Festival in 2019. That's on Taylor Street in Springfield. And we have a few others, one outside the former Bing Art Center and a couple others downtown. So, yeah, we have a few other murals in the area. This is my first big solo project.
How did you get into painting murals?
That's a good question. We sort of started because we both teach, so it was kind of like a natural progression to kind of work with kids. And then once we got a couple of murals under our belts, we started just doing them on our own. We started getting invited to do murals. So, and I'm a painter outside of this. I don't really do this full time. So, but I normally work on canvases in the studio. So that's my main thing that I do.
With the murals, it's such a great opportunity to spread a message.
Yeah.
Can you say anything about that?
Well, this mural is called Bloom, and I feel like it's kind of come at the perfect time where we're all sort of emerging out of this COVID thing and, like, you know, coming out into the open again. So I feel like, you know, it kind of feels like a time where people are just craving to be outside and, you know, seeing people again, talking to people again. So that's kind of, you know, what I feel when as I'm making this and what I hope it kind of brings while people see it. Yeah. That's my phone ringing.
And that was Priya Nadkarni Green painting the mural in East Hampton along the rail trail, between the rail trail and Mechanic Street. And the interview was like from the last week in June, so it should be done. The mural should be done. I haven't been out that way yet to see, but I bet it's done. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. And you can stream Valley Free Radio online at valleyfreeradio.org. Madness Radio comes up at 4, also in my list of announcements. Today is Tuesday, so the Northampton Farmers Market in downtown Northampton is happening right now. That's behind Thorns and the parking garage, between Thorns and the parking garage on Armory Street, near Armory Street. Tomorrow, Wednesday, is the Florence Farmers Market, and that's by the Lilly Library, and you can get blueberries, plant starts, zucchini, peas, spring turnips, lettuce, onions, beets, kale, and meat, cheese, bread, and cookies. I got cookies last week. I mean, I felt kind of bad going to a farmers market with all this good, fresh, healthy food grown by, well, local hardworking farmers, and what did I do? I buy a cookie. Well, I bought some vegetables too. I'm sure the baker worked hard as well. Anyway, you get lots of things there at the Florence Farmers Market, and people to meet too. And also, there's the Saturday Farmers Market in downtown Northampton as well. So I think for my next clip, I'm going to go back to the Kentucky clips. And this is when I was in Kentucky the last weekend in May. I went to the annual Kentucky Mountain Laurel Festival in Pineville, Kentucky. And as part of that festival, there was a 5K road race. Maybe 30 people ran, including my brother and my nephew. But I interviewed some people at the end of the race. And this is just a little slice of the runners of Southeastern Kentucky region.
How was the race?
It was good. I got second, he got first. So.
Yeah. Do you race together a lot?
Sometimes. No, not too much, not but too much. Sometimes, yeah.
Are you related?
Mm-mm. No.
No? Where are y'all from?
Corbin?
Lately.
Do you have a favorite length?
5K. Yeah.
5K and 2 miles and 10Ks.
What was your time today?
1934, I think.
2005.
How long have you been running?
I've been running for about 6 years.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 15.
What's your favorite part about running?
It's fun. Yeah. I like the competition. Yeah. And I like the environment.
Yeah.
And
just like the trophies there if you win.
The trophies. Do you usually win?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
Oh, do you want to introduce yourselves?
Oh, I'm Christopher Rose.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Walter Peavely.
So you just got done the Mountain Laurel 5K. How was it for you?
It was okay. I've not ran in months. So like this is like I've not ran. I think this is maybe the third time in like 4 months that I've ran.
Like literally.
Literally, yes, literally.
Are you gonna be sore?
Oh yeah, I'm sore now.
What inspired you to run today?
Get out of the house and have something to do.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Did you used to run more?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah. How did you get into running?
Oh, Lord. I've ran my whole life, ever since, like, grade school. Ran middle school and high school and, you know, just off my whole life.
Uh-huh. I used to run a lot, but I had to take... Had to kind of quick because the injury kind of things. Have you had any injuries you had to take time off for?
Yes. Bad knees, bad hips, degenerative discs in my back, arthritis. So, yeah. That's why I've not been running.
Yeah.
Just getting back into it.
Yeah. That's cool. Where are you from?
Originally Middlesbrough, but we've been in Indiana for the last 20 years, so we just moved back.
All right. You want to introduce yourself?
My name's Jennifer Adkins.
Awesome. Thanks. Anything else you want to say? Age? That's okay. If you,
49.
How was the run for you?
It was really good.
Yeah. Do you run a lot?
Not a whole lot, but I used to run a lot.
How old are you?
44.
You ran with the flag the whole way in the flagpole.
Yeah.
How's that?
Well, I usually about every race try to run with it. Your arm gets a little tired, and it'll beat on your collarbone. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you share a little bit about what it means to you?
Yes. I spent 11 years between the Army and the Army National Guard, and I spent 4 years active duty Marine Corps. I have two sons that serve in the Army now. My brother actually passed away while serving in the military, so I try to always carry it just to honor them and everyone that was served in the military before me.
Do you mind introducing yourself and tell me where you're from?
Yes, my name's Gary Ferguson. I'm actually from Harlan, Kentucky.
I'm Marsha Morton.
Where are you from?
La Follette, Tennessee.
Jerry Tipton, Corrington, Tennessee.
Just like your shirt says, Corrington yeah. Running Club. How about you?
I'm Rick Root from Harrogate, Tennessee.
What motivated you all to come out here today?
Well, I've done this race about 3 years ago, and it's flat, and I liked it, and small town race, close to home.
Marcia sent me up here. She was telling me about it. I said, the course is flat, and I wanted to have a decent time today, and I'm real happy with the race, and kind of happy with my time. I enjoyed it.
What'd you get?
Let's see. I think it's 33:14.
All right.
Yeah, that's a lot better than I've been doing lately.
Good for you.
Well, I ran the Shamrock 5K here was 2 or 3 years ago, and this is sort of, well, I was born in Pineville over here at the hospital, so it's sort of like, when you know, you sort of symbolic type of run, and I got a lot of family here, done a lot of genealogy research in this town. I have relatives that are buried over here, all kinds of that, so it's sort of, it's sort of a special place.
This question's burning in my head. So is running painful? Is running competitively painful?
Good question. Marshall has said she's running competitive.
If you push yourself, it is. I used to teach PE, and I told my girls, I said, buddy, even Olympic athletes hurt. You know, you have to push yourself to get your best out of yourself.
Yeah. Anybody else
want to
say anything?
It kind of seems like it gets easier if you're in better shape. It seems like if you're out of shape and you struggle, it's a little harder.
You
feel a bit worse at the end of the day than you do if you're in decent shape.
Yeah, well, to me, I just started this about 6 years ago. And how I got started, I started riding bikes first. And somebody asked me one day, how come you ride on the side of the road back, get run over and killed? And painful, all this endurance that you have to go through. Well, I got to thinking, what made me start it? Well, what happened, my dad, before he died and passed away, he handed off his bike to me. And so I took his bike, put it up against the deck where at my house, and it was sitting there rusting away. And so I said, out of memorandum, I'm going to ride this little bike, the Walmart bike. So I rode that little bike around, and it felt like my dad was saying, hey man, that's my bike. How does it feel? How's it ride? And so it's like, and every runner knows this, when you're by yourself, you think a lot. So it's like, that was my motivation. So that started the whole cascade, got me a faster bike, started riding road bikes, started running. And so that inspiration to me is what, you know, running's painful and all that, but it's sort of like you have a buddy with you that motivates you. And so you can ride and you can run. Today, I rode for my uncle who passed, or run today, that, so I used my uncle who passed away the other day. And sort of like, every time I go out and do something, I say, I'm doing it for this person. Ride for those who can't, inspire those who can. So that's what, it hurts, but that helps.
That was going to lead to my next question. Like, what goes through your head when you're running?
What goes through your head? It's according to where I'm running. Sometimes, am I going to live from that dog chasing me? And that just, and I think, I can think of things when I'm running that come to my head that I don't think of. You know, if you've got an issue, something going on, you need to sort out, you can sort it out running.
I'd say you're pushing yourself, just, you know, trying to just, you know, push yourself, you know, just as hard as you can, and you're going to join the scenery around you sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to the finish line.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks a lot. Anything else you want to add? Do you care if I ask your ages? Do you care if I ask your ages?
Well, I'm 77.
60.
55.
How was the race? That
was runners from the Mountain Laurel 5K in Pineville, Kentucky in late May 2021. You're listening to Out There. Thanks for tuning in today. Madness Radio comes up at 4, followed by Democracy Now! At 5. I got a couple more songs. Here's some El David Aguilar, La Cumbia de la Bici.
De la estrella le da cuerda a la paciencia en la resistencia ante el flujo vial. Tal vez lo más progresista pueda ser lo más sencillo, cual dos tobillos sobre un pedal. Cuando la ciudad va llena, una noble maquinaria en la vida diaria podrá ayudar. Y es un cuadro equilibrado y que se echa a andar tan solo con los alveolos al respirar. Te hallaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá, que nos vayan dejando un carril para nosotros ya. Puede darte varios cambios, del manubrio a los pedales hay muchos males por reducir. Siempre hay estacionamiento, matas el estrés un rato y es más barato, dímelo a mí. Vámonos bajando panza, vámonos librando venas con la cadena que hace fluir. Vámonos al teatro en bici, a la chamba y a la escuela, hasta el bicinema o hasta de aquí. Te hallaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá, que nos vayan dejando un carril pa' nosotros ya. Anda en bici la banda, porque tiene su qué sé yo, cada vez más demanda, porque es mágica, poco no. Ya súbase a la bici, compa, trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá pa' acá, que nos vayan dejando un carril pa' nosotros ya. Anda en bici la banda, porque tiene su qué sé yo, cada vez más demanda, porque es mágica, poco no. Cumbia para las biclas que nos mueven de allá pa' acá, a ver si ya reciclan un carril pa' nosotros ya. ¶¶
This next one is Dumpster Flex by Isaac Andreas, a family friend.
Headed down to the dumpster with my Louis Vuitton. Sneak around with those sneakers that I found to put on. Nike Grandpa is my outfit, cost low as they pass. And no, no commando, I got ego on my bum. My eBay account is my only degree. Yeah, I live off of trust and that's what I believe. Two thirds of me is water, but the rest is your waste. It's just lucky you was waste is treasure to me.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
Now look at what I found just the other day. Now okay, why would someone go and throw this away? It's straight up new with tags and it's never been worn. No stains, no marks, no smell, no dirt, no torn. It's a shirt, guys, they don't expire. Besides, expiration dates aren't made by liars. There's planned obsolescence in this whole expense. I'm diving daily here to give shirts like these just one more chance.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
Every morning I get up out of sheets I found. I brush my teeth every day on these brushes that I found. Get a shave with my razor, guess what we found. Wash my hair with shampoo that yup I found. Put on clothes that were lost and now are found. Eat my brunch, it's just cereal but it's free, I found. Pack a lunch from the mini fridge, all found. Hop on a really nice bike that I wish I found. Check my Craigslist app for the buyers I found. RCV on a couch of both the which I found. Grab some chai at the shop with the cards I found. Yeah, I think I get the point.
Is that too much?
Hey, no, I'm not a hoarder. I live my life with extra order. When I get a good haul, I know I'm blessed. I give thanks to God for a bountiful harvest. Diving isn't just about error and trial. You see, diving is a full-on living lifestyle. Practice what you preach, please don't put it there. If my dumpster fashion catches you unaware.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh.
I got my ego from Eureka, you just think about that. Next time you trash on something, you best call me up stat. I want more competition just to pull them away. I am the predator, your dumpster the prey. I go dumpster diving, that's no metaphor. It's an art I mastered, so now I mentor. If you think you're better, then I challenge thee. A duel, loser must eat the 6-month old brie.
Dumpster flex, dumpster flex. I wrote this song, it's so dumpster fresh. Dumpster flex.